What is the future for cities?
Do you want to learn more about them?
Do you want to know how others think about them?
Do you want to be part of the conversation?
Then this is the right place.
Welcome to What is the Future for Cities podcast. Today, I will interview Gavin Cotterill, Consulting Director of the Cohesive Group's Asia-Pacific Digital Practice and Co-Chair of the Smart Cities Council Digital Twin Task Group. We will talk about his vision for the future of cities, the smart cities and digital twins, innovation and many more. So let's start with a proper introduction. As a consulting director within the Cohesive Group's Asia-Pacific Digital Practice, Gavin helps large private infrastructure and government organizations in transforming them from an analog organization to a data-driven organization by adopting building information modeling, geospatial, IoT, and digital twin technologies. The results of his work can be seen through better economic returns for taxpayers or shareholders, happier and more empowered employees, improved service delivery, and social outcomes. He specializes in transformation strategy development, business case development, and large-scale business transformation implementation delivery. Gavin has experience leading teams across multiple regions and cultures, including Australia, the UK, and Asia. He is increasingly involved in how data as an asset can help deliver value to infrastructure owners and governments. Gavin's passion for a digital future for our cities and built environment sees him involved in several initiatives, such as co-chairing the Smart Cities Council Digital Twin Task Group and assisting Standards Australia Smart Cities Standards Reference Group. He has also directly supported the development of the International Standard for Building Information Management. And with that, Gavin, welcome to the podcast. Gavin, thank you so much for your appearing on the podcast. Let's start with, what does the future of cities mean to you?
Thanks, Vani, and thanks for introducing me to this WTF for cities. Yeah, which I mistakenly thought it was something else, but what the future for cities? So it's an interesting question in terms of what is the future of cities. I think post-COVID, we are now in a different environment, Vani, to what we were a few years ago. And I think especially for, if we take in context for Australia, where we are a massively geographically dispersed country with capital cities dispersed as well. And the role of the sort of what we call central business district is really what the cities are being built upon here. So the whole sort of ecosystem of us here in Australia, whether it's Sydney, Melbourne, is all being built around the city. COVID's come in and has completely disrupted that, especially here in Melbourne, where I'm talking from today. We lived a lot in our homes and we didn't venture into the city much. So what we're now seeing is in terms of what is the role of cities moving forward. And I think that's going to be a really fascinating about how do people get attracted back to the city? Is the CBD still the right answer? I really believe that just because it was always that way, it doesn't mean it has to be in the future. So just because we traveled into the city or traveled on public transport and we all worked in an office, clearly now that that's been disrupted in terms of people like working from home, people like the luxury of that hour commute each way that they could do exercise and spend time with their kids or their families or doing things. So what we're now starting to see is people's lives changing in terms of where they actually live as opposed to the main city. So I think in terms of my view of the future of the city is we've still got to work that out. And I don't think anyone can say in the future, this is what it's going to be like. People have talked about redistributing in terms of office space into residential. Is that the right space? Is it a place where we just go and play in terms of entertainment and less around work? So I think it's really, we've had a once in a 100-year event and we still don't know what's going to happen, really. So at this stage, I don't think anyone can say what the future of our cities is until we have a bit more continuity to understand what people will vote with their feet effectively. And I think that's probably the most important bit. We've seen in quite authoritarian approaches by demanding people coming back to the office. But yeah, I don't think you can determine what the future looks like at the moment. For me, it's too early.
Then what does the city mean to you? If we are at the crossroads of trying to figure out what does the city mean and what it should mean in the future, what does the city mean for you?
Now, it's an interesting point because I just come back from the UK, originally from London. I love London. I'm a London person through and through, and London means incredibly a lot for me. But what does Melbourne, the city, mean for me? I think it's now in terms of culture is important to me. So I still love the arts and the music. So the city provides that infrastructure to host that still. So I do that. I love shopping, especially clothes shopping, but I do that less now because in terms of the internet shopping. So that's become, so for me, the city has become, has changed, I think, in terms of what I see and what I need from the city. So I mainly see it as entertainment, eating out, restaurants, bars. So I see it as more of an entertainment precinct than an arts, and in terms of from a personal perspective, whereas previously it was more of a hybrid where you went to work and you went out as well.
What is the difference between London and Melbourne for you?
Apart from the weather?
Yes.
I know. Some people always think also as well, when I moved to Melbourne and I lived in Sydney, they were like, why are you moving to Melbourne? The weather's terrible. But when you've come from London, the weather's amazing here. So your question is about what's the difference between Melbourne and London? Culturally, obviously, historical context. I always give someone a tip when I go to London or anywhere in Europe is when you're walking around the streets of London, look up because you'll see so much fascinating stuff as opposed to at the street level. Just look up and you'll see architecture and historical context. I think, yeah, the main difference is obviously the historical context. But Melbourne is a fantastic city for culture as well. Amazing restaurants, bars. So it has its own vibe as well. And probably one of the reasons why I feel much more settled being here in Melbourne than I spent 12 years here. I spent 5 years in Sydney, but never really felt that same connection to Sydney. I found it more Americanized, whereas I find Melbourne more European. Yeah, so as a city, as a CBD, that's what I think. But in terms of if you're thinking, are you thinking also finding about outside the CBD as a collective, as the greater Melbourne, or just the CBD? Is that what you're referring to?
For me, the CBD is just a part of the greater Melbourne area because yeah. I live in an outer suburb. I just occasionally go into the CBD. So I would include the whole Melbourne, the greater Melbourne area as well.
I live in Bayside. I live near the water. So I feel very lucky in terms of living near the water. I love that. And I think that's the other thing was what Melbourne is fantastic is the livability of Melbourne in terms of living near the water, in terms of huge amounts of green parks, really good infrastructure, safety. My children, I live in a far safer place than they would in London. That was a big driver of coming to Australia in the first place and bringing up children in a safer, cleaner environment. So yeah, I think the whole package of Melbourne as a city, I love my sports. So there's a huge amount in terms of the entertainment. Also, I go to the city to watch sports. Last week, I went to see Manchester United against Crystal Palace at the MCG. Amazing Tuesday night, freezing cold night, and 76,000 people at the MCG watching football. So that's what I love as well, the passion in terms of from a sports perspective. Two very different cities, but quite similar. But I prefer the smaller scale and the less hectic of life in Melbourne as I've got older. Perhaps if I was in my 20s, I might not have felt the same, but in the stage of my life now, as I'm nearing 50, this is a fantastic city to feel very lucky to live here.
Going into the future, do you have three biggest fears or concerns regarding the future of cities? Or if you want to specifically talk about Melbourne or London or Sydney, which you experienced firsthand?
Yeah, I think cities losing their identity. So, for example, during COVID, I was really concerned about Melbourne losing its identity. And what I mean about being the food capital of Australia in terms of entertainment. So I would probably say that Melbourne probably lost the most, not just because we're in lockdown, because of what the essence of Melbourne actually is. The nighttime economy in terms of the entertainment, the arts, culture, all requires people. And you can't do that at home. So the music scene as well. So I was really concerned about the identity of Melbourne moving forward. And I'm staggered now going back into the city, all these new restaurants opening and people swarming back. And I love that. So, but I also know that myself and others, perhaps you go, you eat and do things closer to home. So you're in that more of that sort of 10-minute radius, 15-minute radius of your home, as opposed to going into the city. So I think that's the one thing about the fears of losing the identity of a city moving forward. Obviously, in terms of safety, I think in terms of the fears that cities become perhaps in terms of less of a safe environment for people to go out. Maybe that in terms of is a concern. Another thing with greater population, in terms of obviously we've had a bit of a reset, I pause on population growth, but I have no doubt that if we want to increase our productivity and we need to bring in new skills and things, people, population, Melbourne is an attractive. So I'm probably a bit concerned that perhaps by bringing more people in becomes of a less desirable place because it becomes more unsafe. So like living in London, I unfortunately witnessed a lot of things that weren't great growing up because of the nature of being a bigger city. So I think safety, I think that is a real concern. What's my final fear? I think probably more aligned to close to what I do for a living in terms of around in the smart city, digital twin space for cities and governments. There's a need to make better decisions through data and information to deliver better services. But what my fear of that is the data and information and what people use with that information. So I think it's really important that that information data is used accordingly and not for the wrong purpose. I think that's probably my other fear, that we don't end up in some dystopian future where data and information is used, perhaps not the right purposes, if that makes sense.
May I ask you to describe what does smart city mean to you?
You ask 20 people what smart city is and you'll get 20 different answers, that's for sure. And you'll ask 20 people what digital twin is and you'll get 20 different answers as well. So I actually see digital twin and smart cities as not exclusive. I feel that they do the same thing. Let me explain a bit about that. So you've got to think about this top down and bottom up. So top down, effectively, a smart city or digital twin is there to support decision making. Okay. Mm-hmm. So whether that decision-making is around your city services, whether it's infrastructure, asset management, water, emergency services, economic development, the whole purpose of the program or project or framework is the ability to bring together disparate data sets together to help you make a better decision. So whether that is, like I said, that those city services data, so it could be asset management, it could be around planning, it could be around water, it could be economic development, whatever. At the moment, when we work with cities and whatnot, their data typically is dispersed across many different platforms, tens and tens of different platforms, and it's all very siloed because organizations are organized in silos. So they create those data in silos. And what happens is that that data isn't being able to be shared, isn't being able to be reused to understand about how well or badly performing a city is. So for me, this is about how do you bring together the strategic objectives of a city? So if you look at any city strategic plan, you'll see 5 or 6 different pillars. But if you map that against the city services, you get an intersect there of use cases that in terms of articulate how that can support better decision-making by using technology and data. So for me, if I go back to the top down, better outcomes, better sustainability, better social, better economic returns through data and information is a vision, better outcomes for a city. That's effectively from a top down. Mm-hmm. But then what we need to look from a bottom up is we need to be a bit more descriptive about that. How can data and technology support city services in performing their ultimate objectives as an organization? The term smart cities in terms of, for me, is about really about how data and information can support an organization, whether it's a city, infrastructure, whatever, bring their strategic objectives to life. And I think for me, that's what really is a smart city or the digital twin, is how data information can support better outcomes for citizens. And that can come in multiple different capabilities. So that could be around visualizing, integrating, and connecting disparate data sets to help you make better decisions. Once you bring all that together, you can start to analyze that data to understand how well or badly performing that city is. But then lastly, you could then simulate that data to predict and test policy decisions. So a really good example for that was during COVID here in Melbourne. We lost our car parking spaces because cafes and restaurants had to bring from inside to out. What that meant is that councils lost revenue, which they knew, but there was unintended consequences of that as well. So there was less economic development in terms of, because people couldn't access shops because there was less parking. There was actually more pollution because people were driving around more trying to find a parking space. The point I'm making here is in terms of the smart city digital twin can provide you capabilities with data and information that you can't do now. So what is the unintended consequence of invoking that policy decision? So we know here in Melbourne, for example, there's been a lot of discussions around, have we got the bike lanes on the right streets? So wouldn't it be fantastic if we were able to test that policy first to see if the unintended consequences were going to be not palatable? So that would be if the bike lanes are in the wrong spot, which some people think they are. I'm not in a position to say that they are or they aren't, but people in the community, in terms of the business community, have said that they're not. But wouldn't that be amazing for City of Melbourne to actually just test that digitally first to have a lower impact? Because that means they now might need to rip that bike lane up, redistribute it. So there's been a capital cost with that, an impact with the public, impact with businesses. So for me, that's what, in terms of around digital twin or smart city, in terms of depending on which way you want to cut it, is that ability to make better decisions for the ultimate aim of the public. That's, for me, that's what smart city is really, in terms of getting good information and data to support good decision making. That's, for me, is what it's all about. It's not necessarily about smart parking, smart lighting, smart bins. That's great. That's all part of it, but that's just one data set. That's one service. That shouldn't be the focus point of a smart city. And unfortunately, a lot of smart city programs have focused on that sort of point solution. Whereas if we're going to provide better cities and better services and better outcomes, we need to think about bringing data and information together to make better decisions on delivering services, not just point solutions and putting a bit of technology on something and thinking it's going to solve everything.
What are the obstacles bringing the data silos together? Because I understand that the different departments, different governmental levels are working in silos and they have different data sets, and even the private sector has their own data sets. What are the obstacles and how can you combine these data sets to give you an overview of the whole city?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the obstacles are, there's a couple, but the main one is that people create their own data in their own standard, in their own format, in their own approach. So there isn't a common, in a lot of organizations, there isn't a data strategy that tells you how you're going to procure and manage your data consistently and effectively. Everyone does it in their own way. So what that makes it very difficult then to stitch that together effectively. So people don't use standards. So ISO 8000 is a good example in terms of providing that structure and that governance to data procurement and data management, because you need that. So the whole purpose of being able to visualize and integrate and connect different data sets to help that decision making. Smart cities, digital twins all sounds very sexy, but there's an unsexy component to that, is of that master data management. So you need to have that good governance and good practice in place. A, that you're procuring data from your supply chain that is effective, and B, that you're managing data effectively. Because if you don't, no point in surfacing that information in a single pane of glass, as I like to call it. If you get rubbish data in, you're going to get rubbish data out. So for me, you've really got to focus on in having a data-driven approach within your organization, and having really starting to think about data as an asset. And some of the most forward-thinking companies around the world are starting to see data just as important from an economic perspective as the physical asset. And that's a really important part. And that takes a real shift away from traditional business models to get people to start putting a financial component, a financial number on data.
Is this why you are a bit afraid of data management? That due to economic benefits, companies and governments can divert how they procure data and how they use it?
I'm fearful in terms of the wrong data getting in the wrong hands for the wrong purpose. A use case for better asset management of a road or a building typically it becomes a low risk in terms of that data being used for the wrong. But if you're starting to use facial recognition, starting to track people, understanding about their patterns and starting surveillance, I think I'd start to get concerned more about that. But centralizing operational data sets is less of a concern for me as long as you've got the right vision and the right strategy and the right plan in place and you have the right use cases. So as someone who develops use cases and strategies for cities and governments, I have less of a risk because I understand what the use cases that they're seeking. It's more around in terms of security of that data is a concern, of course, to make sure that that doesn't get wrong. But for me, about the wrong data is about becoming a bit Orwellian, a bit 1984 with its approach to data. That's probably what I'm concerned about. Less concerned about the use cases to support city services. But if you're in a water treatment plant and you've got sensors monitoring and controlling the amount of chlorine that goes into the treatment works and that undertakes a cyber attack, you could poison a whole city, as an example. So there's security issues and there's different layers of people using the right level of standards, whether it's ISO 27001 or ISO 19650 part 5 or sorry, I'm a bit of a standards geek, so I understand that the role of standards fairly so. It's difficult to understand in terms of exactly what's going to happen in the future with all of this, to be honest. I work for a company that we're helping clients, we're trying to work this out, but we're still learning. We're providing some of the leading work in the country, but we're still trying to work out what this is as well, because it's all moving at such a fast pace. Our role is to make sure that we give the right advice and ethical advice as well.
Is the pure data knowledge, or do you differentiate between the data sets and the insights and knowledge you get from it?
So data becomes information. So for me, data is useless in its own right, but it needs to provide you with information.
And you also mentioned that with Digital Twin, with smart cities, we could investigate the unintended consequences. Do you also mean unknown unknowns to investigate those as well with smart cities and digital twins? Are those unintended consequences you mentioned already suspected ones, that there might be some economic...
A lot of people don't realize about... You develop a strategic brief of something, mm-hmm. a railway station, railway, road. You have a strategic brief that goes through a business case, then goes through design. We build it, we operate it, and then we demolish it. And then we go through that sort of, for me, is in terms of being able to test that strategic brief first. I think for me that we don't know enough, perhaps, when we do the strategic brief of what those consequences are. And there's a reason why we don't know is because we don't have all the data and information. We can't simulate that. Mm-hmm. So what we have is the ability to use technology and data to support the strategic brief, i.e. does this train station get 25,000 people in and out during rush hour? Does this train station in this location provide me with economic development? Does this precinct provide me with that economic development? Are people going to utilize that area in terms of restaurants, bars, cafes, arts? How can we test those use cases? Mm-hmm. How can we use mathematical actors within our simulation packages to actually, well, is this the right location to put this train station? Are we creating a white elephant? It doesn't provide you the value that it said it was going to do. So in terms of, in the UK, we would call that a white elephant in terms of something that was built but didn't provide the value. So like a lot of Olympic sites, they're not sustainable. So for example, a future Olympic site could be modeled to understand about what would be the post-games occupancy of that. Are we in the right area? Look at Athens as an example. It's one of the reasons why the London Olympics was wanted to be known as the sustainable games. So it could be repurposed and reused post the games. And I think that's really important. So for me, it's really about using data and technology to support decision-making to understand, is this the right building? Is it in the right place? Does it meet the original strategic brief, which went through the business case stage? And for me, we don't know what the unintended consequences are. If we can use data and information to test that hypothesis or test the strategic brief, we're only going to get better outcomes by knowing, are we actually making sure that we develop the right outcome for our cities and built environment? Well, we've built cities and we've built places without digital and without data, without technology previously before, and we've done okay. For me, it's around in terms of how can you build on what we've got in terms of how can you make better decisions. So Docklands is an example. A lot of criticisms around building Docklands here in Melbourne. Was that the right choice? People criticise it's like a ghost town. So perhaps if there was an opportunity to build a new precinct now using data and technology to support that, to understand, is this the right? We've got the Olympics coming up in 2032. Are we going to build the right precincts in the right areas? So for me, it's ensuring, it's like an insurance to provide you with that confidence to ministers, to bureaucrats, to the public, that this is the right thing and it's not going to cost money to try and rectify. For me, it's like it's providing me with the assurance that you are not only building something physically, but you're also building it digitally first to know that it works.
I really see the value of trying something first with less financial resources, using only digital assets and data to get the knowledge whether it will be a good decision to do it in the physical world. That sounds amazing. And this sounds like an opportunity for the future of cities. What are the three biggest opportunities for you regarding the future of cities?
If I'm coming from me as a public, I want to have a safe, clean, vibrant city. I want to be very safe with my family, with my kids. I want to also have, in terms of an identity, in terms of the future of Melbourne, again, is in terms of, for me, I want it to retain. I love the food, entertainment component. I want that to remain, but I also want it to be a safe city, a vibrant city. Also, I'd like to fix some of the social issues we have at the moment in terms around homelessness, especially here in wintertime, and you see people who are unfortunate and who are sleeping out rough. I feel like that's something that we could look to try and rectify. I think also as well, attracting people by having those key services that people want. So Melbourne's been very livable city as an example, but I think how do you attract people? I think growth is really important. I'm not shy of disruption either. One of the things I do struggle here in Australia, it's probably one of the greatest weaknesses and greatest strength, is the fact that we are a very small population. And I struggle with the innovation capacity here. And one of the key drivers for innovation is around bringing people together in a single space. So if you look at Tel Aviv, you look at London, you look at Barcelona, there's a hub of people that do business all across the supply chain. Here we struggle because we have small populations in large geographically. So I feel like in terms of growth, we shouldn't be scared of growth, but it needs to be managed accordingly. So I see it as an opportunity that you incentivize people to come here, but also provide with the right level of services. I feel that's for me. So if I think about it, as the first one is around public, around me as a person, my family. And then the second one is, I think about it as from a client, from a government perspective, in terms of I want to attract the best brains here, best people here, in terms of to do business, because effectively you want to attract, because people are incentivized to come to cities because they want to work on leading projects, they want to work with smart people. How do you bring that together? So I think that's the biggest opportunity for cities, is how do you attract and retain talent? For example, someone like Hobart has a real issue around brain drain. If you're young and smart, you typically leave, go to the mainland. You would get educated in Hobart and then you would leave. And then you would potentially spend 10, 15 years and then you might come home and have a family or not. So they have a real driver in terms of how do they retain talent, as an example. Different cities have different drivers and different challenges. So Melbourne is going through huge growth. So how's developed infrastructure to support that growth? And then we have an issue here around, because of the federation system, that the state government has to finance the infrastructure growth, but immigration is done federally. So how do you manage those two competing policies there? Hence why we're seeing the big build here in Melbourne with so much investment, level crossing removals, airport rail link, et cetera.
You said disruption. Disruption in terms of innovation, or what did you mean by disruption?
I suppose what I meant by that is I'm comfortable with change. My first job, I was a milk boy delivering milk. And that was an amazing job. I was 13, 14 years old, as on a Saturday job, delivering milk. And it was only until recently I realized how beneficial that was for me, because I was used to dealing with the public, dealing with multiple different stakeholders, also early in the morning. So realizing that some people love to talk, some people don't want to talk, etc. So, and now I lead a digital advisory practice. Okay, so you've gone from something really analog in delivering milk to a front door in London, mm-hmm. to now I'm helping shape governments with their views in terms of how they can deliver their services better. So I've always feel comfortable with disruption, and I feel that we need to keep disrupting to drive change. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the challenges that we do have here, is that we could do more, we could innovate and change more, but because we are, like I say, a very small population and a very dispersed, there's less drive to change compared to if you're in Paris, Berlin, Barcelona, London. You have to innovate more. You have to compete more, because you're in a, Europe is a fascinating space where you've got multiple cultures, multiple huge amounts of population, and people need to innovate to survive. So that's something I feel that I'd like the pace of change to be quicker. But I've got to accept as well that not everyone feels that same way about disruption moving forward. Some people would say smart cities is a horrendous idea, and I would probably agree, unless you understand what the problem you're trying to solve. And I think a lot of people see with smart cities is there's a solution looking for a problem.
Kevin, thank you so much for your time. I highly appreciate your answers, and you were very generous with your time. Do you have any closing comments or requests for the audience?
The thing I'd leave people with is understanding the difference between digital twin and smart cities, and you probably heard a lot more about digital twin over the last 18 months, 2 years, and perhaps less about smart cities. But what I want people to sort of understand is really, it's all about data and information to support better outcomes. Don't get sucked in by the different vendors or different technology visualizations, but start to think about how information and data can support better outcomes for cities, governments, etc. So try not to make a separation between digital twin and smart city.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kevin, for your time.
Thank you.
It was really interesting to hear from Kevin the practical use of smart cities and digital twins manifesting in better decision-making supported by data, not to mention his interest in testing decisions and consequences digitally first. You can find out more about Kevin online. All the links are in the show notes. What was the most interesting part for you? What questions did arise regarding Kevin's approach to the future of cities? What have you learned from this interview? Let me know on Twitter at WTF4Cities or on the website where the transcripts and show notes are available. Additionally, I will highly appreciate if you consider subscribing. I hope this was an interesting interview for you as well, and thanks for tuning in.
What is the future for cities podcast?